Sunrise Radio Podcast.
Welcome to a series of programs celebrating success stories of inspirational women on International Women's Day. My name is Raj Palmer, and in this episode, we will be speaking to Dr. Amina. Firstly, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Amina. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. So if you'd like to take a moment just to introduce yourself to our listeners, I know you wear many hats, so if you could just introduce yourself.
So I'm Dr. Amina. I grew up in Bradford and I'm a local GP. I also have a skin clinic in Bradford called Skin Britannia, and I do some medical legal work. And more recently, I have set up a campaign called the Blue Poppy Campaign, and it's to recognise frontline workers. So we've set up a government petition which has been approved, and we will be basically sending that through everywhere to get signatures. So just so that everyone who's on the front line can get some recognition, and that's what is happening with me at the moment.
I know you do some amazing work. Let's take it back a number of years. How did you first decide to become a doctor, you know, enter the medical profession?
So you will find this surprising, but I was actually 7 when I decided, and it was actually after a visit to a local GP. I'd been unwell for about a week, and I went to the GP, and the GP said to me, she said, well, if you don't go to school, how are you ever going to grow up and take my chair? And I just looked at her chair, and it looked so comfortable. It was all twirly and everything. And I thought, I really like that chair. And that sort of sowed the seed. And that was it. That was the reason I decided I want to be a doctor.
Just so I could sit on
that twirly chair. If only I had known, I could have gone to a stationery shop and probably done the same. But it sort of sowed the seed, and the idea just grew on me. And I, you know, it was my lifelong wish, if you like, that I wanted to be a doctor. And then, you know, everybody would come home from a hospital and say, oh, it stinks of hospital. And I would come and secretly think, I like that smell. I don't know why I like the disinfected smell. So, yeah, that's how it started. But I come from a small community, and there wasn't a girl who had studied even to get to her GCSEs. A lot of girls were sent abroad. And so I was really privileged to get that opportunity, because the teachers I had spoke to my father and explained that I had potential. And really, those teachers made the difference in my life, because my father made the decision that he wasn't just going to send me abroad. He was going to allow me to reach my potential.
Now you mentioned, you know, that you know, some girls are sent abroad. You know, that they're not as probably much as they used to be, but there is kind of still a cultural stigma where, you know, the boys are educated, and the expectation is the girls will just stay at home and look after the household. You know, you're an exception to the rule. Yeah. You know, what would you say, what would you comment about that?
So I agree, it was happening back then, and girls had a lot of obstacles in terms of education. Now, I think when I actually went on to do my GCSEs and then A-levels, there was a lot of outcry that I would actually be leaving home to study, because I received a place at Leicester. Once I returned as a doctor, the floodgates opened. Now, it was always easy. If a young boy or a young man wanted to study, there were no obstacles in his path. It was encouraged. The sad thing was that the girls were more inclined to make the effort. So even though boys were allowed, they were very few in the community who actually made the effort and continued to study. As soon as I returned and everybody realised the value of educating girls, it was like the floodgates opened. We now have probably more educated girls in our community than we have educated boys. just because I think once you get given an opportunity that wasn't there before, you grasp it with both hands. And so that is what is absolutely lovely about those floodgates opening. And really, make no mistake about it, it was really difficult. You know, my mother was quite isolated, and you know, I really admire my mum because despite everything, her brothers, her sisters, her mother actually, you know, being against it, she stood firm in her beliefs that her daughters should be allowed the opportunity. So it wasn't just me, it was also my sisters who were allowed. And I think really it speaks for itself. Now I'm sat in clinic and I work within that same community, and so many of them will say to me, they'll say, you know, when your mum was catching one and two buses to come to your parents' evening, we thought she was mad. We thought, well, she's lost the plot. Why is she making such an effort for her daughters? And yet now they're saying that we realise she was doing the right thing. And even to, you know, where we talk about women's, even to 20 years ago, my father would opt. Somebody once said to my father, and I had already graduated by then, he said, oh, it's great that your daughter's a doctor, but wouldn't it have been better if it was your son? And my dad looked at him like, really? So one of the things my dad actually did say to him was, he said, you know, when I'm not feeling well, he said, and I'm lying down, if my daughters walk into the room and they see that I'm not well, they run to me. One of them's massaging my feet, the other one's making me a cup of tea, the other one's pressing my head. If my son's coming to the room, they look, say, you're all right, Dad. Yeah. I'm not feeling well, they're all right, and they run out. So he said, in this day and age, having a daughter is actually a huge advantage, because there is no big difference in terms of what you get from a girl or what you get from a boy, because actually girls are going out there, they're working. It's not like yesteryear when they grew up that the man would be the breadwinner. And so if you didn't have a son, you know, by the time you were in your old age, you would be in a lot of sort of strife, because you'd have to keep working into your 80s or 90s just to bring the money home.
Now, moving on to Skin Britannia.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that. Now you're very proactive when it comes to looking after yourself, looking after your skin. You know, there's a lot of people maybe in the last year, due to the circumstances, who maybe haven't been looking after themselves as much. What kind of tips would you give those individuals?
So I think this is something that I have seen quite often, and it's generally because the way we've grown up, we've been in sort of a fight or flight response. When we've had underprivileged backgrounds, we've been so focused on working our way out of that. We've kind of neglected ourselves in doing that. So we're not looking after our health. We're not looking after our well-being, and we're not looking after ourselves. And I think you don't notice it until you put the brakes on and you look at yourself, and suddenly you're like, whoa, when did I get that? You know, when did I start noticing pigmentation? So generally, you get to a point where you sort of things slow down, and then you start to look after yourself. I was unwell about 12 years ago. During my second pregnancy, I became suddenly unwell, and it transpired that I had stomach cancer. And up until that point, I was pretty much the same. I didn't really look at myself. I didn't check if I was having the right vitamins. I didn't check if I was eating well. And my skin, you know, I didn't even look at that. I was a soap and water girl. That's how bad I was. And then what happened was, after I became ill, I became super sensitive to the sun, and I had to use sunscreen indoors and outdoors. Now, that is the one thing that is important. Even to Asians, we might not burn, but the sun still ages our skin. And so as I was recovering, I decided to study dermatology. And whilst doing dermatology, I recognized some of the things we can do to look after ourselves. And one of the most important things is sunscreen. There are other things. For certain conditions like acne, it's important to get it treated when you're younger. Because although we grow out of acne, you know, well, most of us do, the scars it leaves behind can be lasting. So pigmentation and ice pick scars, off hook scars, they're like little holes in the skin, and that can be a little bit more difficult to treat. Also, as Asian, because we go abroad, we go to Pakistan, come back, we don't think about sunscreen. A lot of us develop pigmentation, so brown marks on our face, particularly as we get into the 30s. Now, the damage starts actually early when we're younger, but you don't see it because the body manages it. But as we start getting old, our body doesn't manage things as well as it used to when we were younger. So actually you start seeing the effects of basically what you had done when you were younger.
Just to interrupt you there, you mentioned sunscreen. Yes. But you're an advocate of actually using sunscreen every day.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Not
just when you see the sun.
Yes.
Because in essence, like, I'm sat here at my desk today, I've got sunscreen and I've got SPF 50 on. The one point that made me realize actually you can damage your skin indoors was whilst I was having chemotherapy, my skin became super sensitive. One day I was sat inside in the shade and I had sunscreen at home, and I'd wear it every time I stepped out of the house, but I actually started to burn sitting in the shade. And I realized, my goodness, the damaging rays are even there when you're not sat in the sun indoors, it's when you're in the shade. So light itself is damaging. And I should have known that, everybody should know that, but it's one of those things that you don't connect, because when you think of sunburn, you expect to be out in the sun to get the burn. And, you know, there are two types of damaging rays. You have the UVB rays, which cause the burning, but you also have UVA rays, and they cause aging. And so having worn sunscreen regularly, I began to notice that my younger sister, when stood next to me, had more fine lines. And this sort of made me realize, hold on a minute, this wasn't just protecting my sun, it was actually the skin, it was actually preventing aging. And that's another reason why, not just preventing skin cancer, it prevents aging. And it's kind of a big reason for a lot of people, because as you get older, you start looking at more expensive treatments to then try and treat that. It doesn't mean that it can't be treated. We treat, we have a lot of anti-aging remedies in the clinic, whether it's skincare, whether it's laser, whether it's injectables, but it is something that we can treat if you get to the point. And particularly for people who have face-to-face jobs, it makes such a big difference when they get that bit of extra confidence. Now, I did not realize the extent to which your skin can affect you in your day-to-day. I remember I treated one lady who, when we got to her goal, she actually said to me, she said, you know, she said something, I didn't tell you at the time, but she said, I was really quite, you know, I was struggling. And she said, I'd been to the GP and he'd given me antidepressants. And she said, it wasn't related to my skin, it was just generally. And so she said, I put them down. When I contacted you, when we started treating my skin, she said, I gained more confidence. And I thought, well, how, you know, during this conversation, I'm thinking, well, how would your skin affect your depression? And so what she said was, once her skin was treated, if her husband ever said to her, why don't we go out? Before she had treatment, she would think, oh gosh, I have to put my makeup on. Then when I go out, I come home, I have to take it all off. She said, I didn't get the motivation. So I would just say, no, I'm fine, you go out. So he'd go out for a walk with the kids or go out for a meal. She'd stay at home. Now, she said, when my husband said, shall we go out for a walk? I've already got my coat on. And that's it. I'm running to get, you know, outside of the door. And she said, just the fact that I go outdoors, I do more, it's uplifted my mood. It's made me more, you know, I've got more to almost live for. There's a bit of excitement there because there's no spontaneity. You know, without spontaneity, things were getting a little bit boring. And so she said, I've just thrown them away. because I don't need those medicines. I've actually managed to do it with my lifestyle. And I just looked and I thought, wow, I learned so much about this in my diploma. But when somebody speaks of it like that, the effect, and she had confidence. She said she had been working for years and she'd started to speak out more immediately. She wasn't worried that people were not looking at her, but looking at the problems with her face. So she had more confidence to sort of even stand up for herself in meetings. So her life just sort of, she got that little bit she needed to improve her own life. And I think that is the key, looking after yourself, getting your confidence, and then standing up for what you believe in, so to speak, and, you know, taking strides, improving your own situation.
That's amazing. We are unfortunately short of time now. So let's just quickly, very quickly, touch upon the Blue Poppy, Poppy project that you mentioned earlier. Tell us a bit about that.
So the Blue Poppy campaign is a campaign to help frontline workers. Now, as somebody who's worked in A&E for a number of years, I know that when you see anything that is out of the norm, it can really affect you. I mean, there were times where throughout, I actually was offered, in certain cases, I was offered counselling. Now, the Blue Poppy campaign is about giving people who are on the front line, whether it be medics on the NHS, nurses, doctors, anyone, the police, the emergency services, the retail staff, help and support. We've set up a parliamentary petition, which has been approved, and this will be going out to everyone. It's not just about this period, but helping them after as well, and helping them in a number of ways, whether it's providing mental health support, whether it's providing some financial help, because some of these guys have been, paying for childcare, which is much more harder and more expensive, because there's so little of it at the moment with a lockdown, and just helping them with the aftermath, because this has been similar to fighting a war. People have been losing lives, and there are people on the front line who are risking their own lives. My colleagues, even myself too, which is, is something that they've been going through, and we want to give them that support. We have a website called bluepoppycampaign.org, where you can go and you'll see the petition itself. It's just, all those people who've been keeping this country running, whether they've been making sure the food supplies are in there, the infrastructure, making sure that mayhem doesn't break loose, because, the bin men have been collecting our bins to make sure, these are all things, people who you don't think of, the logistics people, the ones who drive your food to your city to make sure you don't go without. They all need recognition, and they may all need support. We've seen that so many people in these jobs are losing their lives. And I think it's important to provide that recognition for them and to provide the support they need. And so actually, there's also going to be pages on there as well.
There's bluepoppycampaign.org.
Yes. bluepoppycampaign.org, and there will be a petition on there. There's a little bit about how it came about. So this was from a conversation between myself and my niece, who's a second year medical student, Sahabia Hassan, and my sister Sahida Ahmed. We were trying to work out how we can help people manage what's been happening, how they have managed the effect of having to keep going. Teachers have still been going into school. I have seen teachers who have contracted through my day job coronavirus because they were providing essential services. We've seen ourselves lose colleagues, a very prominent surgeon recently, Mr. Arthur Khan, an orthopedic surgeon, just died a few days ago. It wasn't something that was happening just at the beginning. Throughout, NHS colleagues have been losing their lives. And this one was only just over the weekend. It was really saddening because this surgeon was very accomplished, but also he was in his early 50s, fit and well, no pre-existing condition, not overweight in any way. So, when people are helping others and then they, you know, and he actually was offered the vaccine, but he just hadn't had the time because he was so busy to go and get it. And that time made the difference between him contracting it and not, you know, not making it through. It is a sad time for my colleagues, not just from the health. Some of them have had the coronavirus and now they're struggling with long COVID and the effects of that. Some of those who make it, and then others have had lots of different implications, psychological, physical, financial implications. And I just hope that we can provide them some help, you know, to make the blow as little as possible. And really, it was, we thought of the blue poppy, because when you think of, you know, the red poppy and how people lost their lives in a battle, this is a, you know, invisible battle against a common enemy throughout the world.
Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Ahmed, today. Literally, if you could, in maybe in 30 seconds, just a message to the Sunrise Radio listeners or young ladies who maybe want to follow in your footsteps.
Follow your dreams. You know, you only don't succeed if you don't try. If you try, you will succeed. There are going to be barriers, but push them, work through them, because you will be very fulfilled. I love my job. I absolutely love it. I wouldn't do anything else. And I would say, if you are interested in any type of job, go for it. But if you're interested in medicine, definitely go for it. We need you guys. We do need you, and you will love it yourself. It will be very fulfilling. Try and reach to the top of the tree, because even if you don't get the top, and the branches just below are going to be good enough. That's my father's saying, and it's always worked for me.